Welcome to Talking New Energy, a podcast from Delta EE, the new energy experts. We'll be talking about how the energy transition is developing across Europe, with guests who are working at the leading edge of this transition. Hello, and welcome to the episode. Today, I'm in conversation with Greg Jackson, founder and CEO at Octopus Energy, one of a new breed of energy retailers that's popping up across Europe. Octopus are based in the UK and have been quickly growing customer numbers and grabbing some attention in the market. So I'm delighted to have Greg on the podcast today and to talk a bit about Octopus and Greg's views on the market. Hello, Greg.
Hello, how are you doing, John?
Good, thanks. Greg, thanks for joining me and looking forward to talking with you about the growth of Octopus and your perspectives on the market today. Now, you're not got an energy sector background. You come from more of a tech industry or tech background. I'm very interested to know what about the energy market captured your attention, because from one point of view, it's a crowded market. There are many suppliers. Energy is a bit of a political hot potato at the moment. Retail margins are pretty thin. It's a very regulated market. Given all of that, why did you find it interesting?
Well, I think the first thing is that customer experiences have generally been not great in energy. So my own experience as a customer and that of the people we read about in the press all the time suggest there's a big opportunity to improve customer experience. But I think I and the founding team came from a technology background. We'd built a lot of transactional platforms in our previous business. And our observation was that there were a couple of sectors, energy and retail financial services, that were colossal globally, which had really not yet been disrupted by technology. And if we looked at energy, not only did we have the bad customer experiences, we also have a high cost to serve, a lot of mistakes, and really excitingly, the opportunity to do something about climate change. If we put all that together, energy is a $2.5 trillion undisrupted sector globally, with all the opportunity of fintech, and then both the business and moral imperative to sort out climate change.
Okay, and how long ago was it when you started thinking and acting on this?
We first started thinking about it in 2012, 2013, when we'd sold a business that built transactional platforms. But I think it became apparent if we wanted to make a really significant impact, we needed to be well-backed. And it wasn't until 2015 that I happened to meet the founder of the Octopus Capital Group. And they are one of the leading venture capital outfits in the UK. They've also got more solar farms than anyone else in the UK. And I pitched him on the idea. That was late 2015, and we launched the public in May of 2016.
And to give listeners a feel from launching in 2016 to today, how big are you? How much momentum have you gathered?
So we're about 750,000 households customers, so about 1.3 million energy accounts, and that's growing around 50 to 80,000 households a month.
Okay, so that's quite a rate of growth and quite a customer base you've established. Greg, if you think back to when you got excited and enthusiastic about energy and the last few years of experience of growing a business to that level, have you got more excited, less excited, or has the nature of your excitement changed at all?
I think we get more excited all the time. The opportunity, I guess everything we do that works or gets traction creates more permission for the next level of disruption. So I don't think at any point now could we sit back and think we've been successful. But we have delivered a lot of the things that we promised we would or that we believed we could. And I think that then enables us to kind of accelerate the investment and the rate of change that we're trying to bring to bear on the market.
Okay. And looking at the things that you've learned that have gone well, and how would that translate for a customer? So if I'm afraid I'm not an Octopus Energy customer, but if I was, what would that translate to in terms of customer experience, in terms of what you're really proud of in the last few years? And how does that compare to your, I guess, your mission of the not so good customer, changing the not so good customer experience that is more prevalent in the industry today?
I think the first and probably bravest or hardest thing is that energy, certainly in the UK and in many other countries, has fallen into the trap of companies luring customers in on unsustainably low prices and then hiking them typically a year later once the customer's DD is established and once inertia kicks in. And I think the very heart of bad experience is the distrust that that causes. Customers finally get around to a switching energy company. They think they've got a great deal. And then just a year later, they discover that they haven't switched to a better company. They've just switched to one that's the same as all the others. And I think from the very beginning, we were determined not to do that. And really, our question was, is it possible to build an energy company with prices that start as good value, not necessarily the cheapest, sustainably good value, and carry on being good value year in, year out? And I think the first thing I'm really proud of is that our customers will be experiencing that with their pricing.
And do they know that, Greg? Do you make that visible to them, or how does the customer see and understand that?
Yeah, so a great example would be energy companies typically have a 3-page bill. If you're an online customer, you'll get an email every month from an energy company every quarter saying log in to see your bill. And you literally have to log into a website with a name, a username and password you'll never remember because of the specific rules that you don't use elsewhere, to download a 3-page PDF with hundreds of numbers, buried among which are the prices you've paid for two products. Meanwhile, Tesco have got a 2-inch till receipt that can have a dozen products on it and it's easier to follow. So what we did was rather than blame regulation and say, look, here's that impossible to decipher bill, we created a really clear, transparent, readable statement that customers get every month with their key numbers in plain text in the preview pane of the email. So every month, they're aware of what they're spending and what energy costs. So I think we try and make people aware of it from the very beginning.
And that, and you talked a bit about coming from a tech background, but part of that will involve tech, but part of that just involves thinking, putting the customer first in your thinking, I imagine.
Yeah, I think far too often companies in incumbent industries like energy think of tech as being a way to cut costs, but actually it's a way of reinventing the entire customer experience. So, tech can bring transparency. We often remark, Uber shows you where the car is. Deliveroo lets you know that the guy is about to knock on your door. That transparency in the operation applies just as much in energy. So our question is, now that it's basically costless to give information to customers, how do we give them as much information as possible to enable them to easily understand what's going on with energy? And then our article of faith is that if we're transparent and open with them, they'll choose to stay with us even when a company with a different strategy might offer them a short-term better deal.
So how would you benchmark yourself then against a Deliveroo, an Uber, an Amazon? If we think of those companies at the top end of customer experience, user interface, have you got a lot more to do, or would you look at them and think, yep, we're in that category as well?
Well, actually, interestingly, the best of the energy companies, and we're one of them, but the best of the energy companies are probably now among the best rated companies for service in any sector. Our Trustpilot rating is 9.6 out of 10. That's a lot higher than Deliveroo's. It's a lot higher than, well, most of the companies you've just mentioned. Now, by the way, I'm not criticizing Deliveroo there. They are incredible. They're an amazing company. But I think it's really important for people to realize that the incumbent energy companies typically have very low ratings. They're kind of cheap and cheerful, unsustainably priced new start companies typically have very poor ones as well. But the best of the new breed have got bonkers high levels of service.
Yeah, okay. And service, we'll come back to service in a minute. I want to ask you about, first of all, the commodity business, and then tech, and then service. So the energy retailer business model has and still is a centralized commodity business model today. And that's what Octopus is. I imagine most of your business is based on so far, but in the future, and we're starting to see this already, it's going to be a very different business model based around optimizing distributed assets. A lot of them, the customer side of the meter, your electric vehicle, electric heating, and so on. So while you're probably mainly a commodity, traditional centralized commodity company today, how do you see yourself in 3 to 5 years? Do you think that will still be the dominant part of your business, or do you think you'll be optimizing EV charging, electric heating, working with batteries behind the meter, and so on?
Yes, so all of the above. I think there's a great video from Jeff Bezos, the founder of Amazon, in 1998, when Amazon had just started opening building its own warehouses. And the interviewer said, I thought you were an internet company, and here you are building real estate. And Bezos said, internet schminternet. It's all about the customer. He says, we will do whatever it takes to bring our customers better products and services and better value. And says, if that means building a warehouse so we can reduce the delivery time, we will do that. And I think it's the same here. Look, it's all about the customer. Customers require energy. They're not bothered whether it's coming, you know, down a wire or from sort of 1,000 miles, or whether it's coming from next door. Mm. What they want is their energy needs met. And our job is to understand the very, very best way of meeting those energy needs, and bring them the products and services that will do that with the best value that suits their lifestyle in a way that makes them happy.
So if I turn that question around a bit then, to achieve that aim, how quickly do you think your business will shift from being almost purely based on centralized commodity to optimizing, for example, electric heating or electric vehicle charging or vehicle to grid even?
I don't think it's sort of an either or a shift. Mm. I think it's just an increasing number of ways in which we will meet that customer need. So, for example, today, I think we've decommoditized electrons to a high degree. We've got plenty of customers now who have tariffs that give them super cheap electricity to charge an electric vehicle at certain times of night, or ones who've got tariffs that mirror the half-hourly wholesale price and that charge kind of peak pricing when their network's busy and super off-peak pricing when it's not. So already one electron is very different than another. And I think the more we move to a world in which a green electron traveling a short distance than an empty wire is a cheap electron, the better. Mm-hmm. Now, that could mean having your own solar panels or batteries. It could mean that we put a facility at the end of your road. It could mean we're supplying you from next door. But I think, you know, that creativity in the way that we meet the customer need is already beginning to happen.
Okay. Tech was next on my list. So I'm interested in your view on tech from two angles, and they're interwoven. One angle is the technology that will be needed to, for example, optimize electric vehicle charging at particular times or offer the right tariff to the right customer, so that the tech platform underlying all of that. And secondly, tech from a both a customer service and a delighting customers, as you've talked about, and a cost to serve point of view as well. So enabling you to provide customers with what they want when they want, but at a really good price. So you've described Octopus as a tech company, and you've got a tech background, but how do you think about tech? Do you think of yourself as building a tech stack and then starting with that, or customer-led and then building the technology around that. I'm interested in how you approach the whole question of the technology needed now and in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first thing is that we as a team, before we started Octopus Energy, really did look at, do we create a new breed of a digital bank or a new breed of digital energy company? So the choice to build a scalable, globally applicable tech stack to disrupt an industry was a decision we'd made even before deciding that it was going to be energy.
Right.
I think in terms of the question you ask about kind of the tech required to, for example, optimize EV charging or versus the tech required, you know, for low cost to serve. Essentially, it's the same tech. What you need is to have truly scalable big data solutions where you've got a highly agile platform that doesn't find, you know, the job of billing and reconciling and providing CRM particularly difficult, and instead can then put all of its effort, I'm sorry, a lot of its effort on what is the future of energy. And that's kind of what we've built. So I'll give you a couple of examples, actually. So we're, 3 years old. We've got a single tech stack that supports our business. It's called Kraken, by the way, just so I can refer to it in the future. Yep. Kraken has, I don't know, 35 billion rows of data live today. Every phone call, every email, every time a customer switched to us or switched away, every interaction and every half hourly meter read, and an estimated read for every half hour where we don't have a smart meter, and so on. And all of that data sits in one place, which means you really can start to kind of join together what would traditionally be seen as sort of industry data, you know, forecasts, which we do, by the way, at the half hourly level using machine learning, settlement, and you know, the cost stack with consumer behavior, which is why you start then to be able to say, you know, look, if we've got a customer on a dynamic tariff and it's had a spiky price and they phone in, are they likely to be leaving us, to be switching to a static price, or actually are they going to be phoning up to say, what can I do in the future to reduce the pay? Now, not only do you have all that joined up data in an agile environment that just keeps growing, you're also able to start thinking about things like, you know, you talked about automated EV charging. Same system knows what tariff you're on, what your price regime is, and therefore exposes via APIs that kind of information to any equipment or services that the customer has authorized or connected. So then you can automatically start plugging into that kind of hive mind of the future energy system. And we can do that today.
Okay, and that presumably was, that's a big investment may not be quite the right word, but you developed this over a number of years with a very strong tech team. Do you consider that as an investment? Is that, or are you able to give us an sort of indication of how much investment that is?
I think the interesting is when you come from a tech background, you learn how to do these things in a way which is, you know, robust and scalable and maintainable, but doesn't involve employing sort of 500 subcontractors.
Yeah.
So, you know, our tech team is probably a small two-digit number, I don't know, 20 or 30 people. You know, throughout our history, it's been growing. So actually, the core platform was developed by fewer people than that. So I think the idea here is that you have small numbers of exceptionally talented people who truly understand the domain and are therefore able to you know, be 10 or 100 times more productive than the kind of developers a lot of people are used to who are essentially doing kind of coloring by numbers.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm most proud of, and I think this really brings it home, is most people will be used to a weekly or monthly or even quarterly release cycle. So, you know, all of the upgrades to your platform happen on that, you know, monthly or whatever cycle. We run genuine continuous integration and continuous deployment, which means we're typically releasing maybe 30 times a day. So you've got this super, turbocharged speed of tech development. And the magic of that is that means that the next stage of development, which has to wait till this one's out of the way, is only waiting hours rather than waiting weeks or months.
And presumably, Greg, this is experience you and your colleagues have got from your own backgrounds, that side of energy. When you look at other energy companies, you talk with your peers within energy, a number of companies are moving in this direction, but a number are still stuck on big old legacy IT systems. How quickly do you think the sector as a whole is able to work in the way you've described? Or do you think for many it will just be really, really hard to change a legacy system and adopt this a new way of working like you described?
It's certainly hard to adopt these ways of describing until you've got tech-savvy leadership. I was at a dinner and someone said to me, come on, Greg, all the big six need to do is employ some smart CTOs who can do what you guys have done. But the reality is you need the tech people right at the top of the company. Because I think when you have tech people at the top of a company, they're able to understand. Ordinarily, the senior manager would say to the tech people, this is what we want you to deliver. But in a tech company, actually what happens is senior management are saying, we know that tech can deliver this. And so what you do is instead of trying to force your tech to fit your business model, you actually create business models that are built around the tech that you know you can build.
Okay, so rather than an energy company with technology, you're a tech company in energy. Is that a fair way to describe it?
It really is, and I don't want to be hubristic about this because, I admire the company that I'm about to name enormously, and I'm sure we can't hold a candle to them. But if you think about the companies that have disrupted other sectors, Uber wasn't started by cab drivers or cab companies that hired tech people, and Amazon wasn't started by retailers that hired tech people. The same applies for any of the sectors that have been disrupted. They're disrupted by tech people who think they can use tech to change the way a sector operates. And to change it, by the way, for the better, to dramatically drive down cost of operation, to improve transparency, bring better customer service. That's kind of the opportunity in energy.
And how, the gap that you have from that direction is the energy sector experience. And some of the energy sector will say, this is all very well and good, but unless you understand how to manage your position in the wholesale market risk, balancing responsible positions, and unless you're effectively coming from the energy sector and have that ability to trade and manage risks in the wholesale market, you'll come unstuck. How would you respond to that?
I'd love to share with them the technology which enables us to do probably a better job of modeling and risk management than traditional energy companies. And I think, I'm being hubristic, but yeah. I risk being hubristic. But the reality is, if we're sitting on 30 odd billion rows of data and the machine can crunch that really, really effectively and churn out, in our case, I think we run 3,000 Monte Carlo simulations a week to test our hedging position against incredible variety of stressed scenarios. So what we're doing is we're using technology to tackle questions like that, as well as customer service, flexible pricing, and APIs. Okay. So, I think the magic there, by the way, is that we're replacing the fragility of spreadsheets with the replicability and auditability of software.
Okay, and I guess not quite taking the human out of it, or the energy trader out of it, but using that software and that intelligence from the data to help an energy trader to optimize positions.
Yeah, and I think increasingly what we do is, first of all, the people we have running our trading, procurement, and risk management are from an energy background.
Yeah.
But we hired people who had the mathematical and software skills to be able to not only do the job, but code the job so that instead of repeating the same analysis each time they run a, you know, kind of look at a position, what they'll do is write software that will do that analysis. We'll build that into the platform, and that means the next time running that analysis, it's just happening automatically. The machine's just doing it, and the people are moving to the next level challenge, which is how we just, you know, kind of keep reducing risk at every stage.
Okay. Greg, something you talked a lot about earlier was customers and meeting the needs of customers in the best possible way. Tech can help with that, but it can only do part of that. You talked about tech leadership. To what degree or how do you manage within a growing business, a growing tech business, to keep customers at the center of what you're doing and not let the tech people get carried away with all the different things that tech could do?
Yeah, so one of the great things we do is every couple of weeks, the members of the tech function in our business actually sit down with the operations people, ones looking after customers, and they sit side by side and they're looking after customers together. And that enables the tech people to truly understand what the kind of problems we're solving are, and also where our tech makes it easier and harder. So the customer operations people have kind of got this mainline injection into improving technology. Every week, we get the whole company together. We join up our three locations by video, and the tech people reveal the latest things they've done to make life easier for operations people. The operations people get a big round of applause, and it's a really positive way of enforcing. That's what tech is for.
And scaling that when you're five times bigger, 10 times bigger in the future, can you maintain that, or is it just a way of evolving your organization as you grow?
Yeah, it's funny. When we had like 20,000 customers, people said, will it scale? And it's 200,000, will it scale? And you know, we're way past that now. Yeah. The reality is it's all designed to scale. So for example, the way we look after customers is every customer is looked after by a semi-autonomous operations team. That team will look after 55 to 60,000 customers. There'll be about 10 people in the team, and they'll look after every aspect of that customer's life with us. So because we've got a tech platform that lets the customer operations people be a true universal agent, and you've got teams where every member of the team is able to do everything, as we grow, all we need to do is create more teams. We don't need to recruit more, you know, billing specialists or metering specialists or second line support. Instead, we've got this wonderful, smart, multi-talented workforce who go through the same training into the teams, and it just keeps growing.
So from talking with you today, Greg, there's three things that I can see or pull out from what you've said. One is being tech-led, as you've said a couple of times. Second, making sure you're customer-led and dovetailing the technology and the customer experience. And thirdly, scalability, making sure everything you do can be scaled for the future. I guess this isn't rocket science or anything that you couldn't find in other sectors, as you've described, but the challenge is the actual application of this. So as we get to the end of the podcast, I'd like to ask you about your role as leading the company in how to keep the different parts of the business balanced, and your biggest challenge as you look forward to what Octopus could achieve in the next few years.
Great. So I think, look, the first thing for me is maintaining a culture in which we don't need to tell people what to do. We need to create the environment and give them the resources to do what they need to do to do a brilliant job. Because as an article of faith, most people want to do a brilliant job. And by the way, energy is one of the most exciting sectors people could work in. They're simultaneously tackling kind of all the problems of the past to do with how customers are treated or high pricing and lack of transparency. And they're at the front line in the fight against climate change. So we've got a motivated workforce, and I just have to make sure that process and kind of rules don't get in the way of their ability to really drive forward with what they want. I think the second thing I have to do is kind of relentlessly advocate for a better energy system, one that's genuinely built around customers. So, you know, the very phrases in energy, like energy supplier, you know, where else do we get a supplier? Drugs, drug supplier. it is the grubby business of taking money off someone in return for a commodity on a street corner. But instead, we should be energy retailers, energy companies. Our job is to truly understand and look after customers and then champion them all the way down the supply chain, so that if we spot the opportunity to reduce the cost of energy anywhere in the supply chain, from generation to transmission to distribution, we should be championing that. And I think as we look at the future of energy and the opportunity to deploy storage, time of use, APIs, automation, you know, there's never been greater need for it than there is right now. So I guess inwardly I guard the culture, and outwardly I drive the change we need to enable an affordable greener energy system.
And a vision for where Octopus will be in 3 to 5 years? Is it such an evolving, dynamic sector that's being disrupted in the ways that you've talked about? How clear are you in where you could be or might be or want to be in 3 to 5 years' time?
Yeah, so look, we'll have to have millions of customers here in the UK, and we'll have to be building a significant market share in multiple other countries. And in order to deliver the potential of the platform and the business we've built to date, anything short of that's probably letting ourselves down.
Okay. And if you had to give one from your experience, not only with Octopus, but in previous companies, one thing that stuck with you as an entrepreneur to pass on to others, be they in startups, in companies like yourself, or an entrepreneur embedded within a big corporate somewhere, what would one key piece of advice from all your years of experience in developing new businesses?
Remember that every single person who works in your company manages to run a life outside of work. And in fact, the less they get paid, the harder that is. And yet, when they get to work, so often companies treat them as though they have to be told how to do the most menial of tasks. Instead, understand if they can do what they do in their private life, they can really do whatever is needed within your company.
Okay, well, you're focused on your people, your trust in them, and the culture that you're developing around letting people get on with their jobs shines through very, very bright and strong, Greg. As does your focus on tech and your passion to disrupt the energy sector. Greg, thanks so much for sharing your thoughts with us today, and congratulations on everything you've achieved with Octopus so far, and look forward to talking with you and your colleagues over the next years as you go, hopefully from strength to strength.
And thank you, John. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks very much. So that brings us to the end of today's episode. We'll be on holiday next week, taking a break from the podcast, and then back the week after that. Thanks again to Greg. Thank you to all of you for listening, and goodbye.